This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 830, brought to you by Mac Weldon. For 20% off your first order, go to macweldon.com/iFanboyMac and use the promo code iFanboyMac. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 830. We love those round numbers. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
Anniversary episode.
Close.
Anything with a zero.
It's good. It's a big. It's a new number. It's a big one. We are a fanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and we pick the one we like the best, and we call it the Pick of the Week, and that's what happens, regardless of the quality of the stack. That's not a commentary this week. It's just me talking. That's fine. It was a fine week. We talk about that book. We'll talk about books, other books of the week. We'll talk about the patron pick. We'll do some listener mail if we have time. And we spoil things. So that's your warning. Use some caution. Use your brain. We're going to have to talk about things. There'll be spoilers.
Use it.
This week, Josh.
Yeah.
You had to pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised that the pick was Batman the Knight number 5?
Surprised? No. No, because you've been enjoying it, like I've been enjoying it.
Sure.
I mean, you sent the list over, and I saw it, and I was like, oh. I mean, it was only mildly. It was like a mild surprise, but not like a, whoa. Yeah.
Unexpected, but not without sense.
Yeah, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, we've been enjoying that book. He likes that book.
Yeah, yeah. So, we get to go for another round of me trying to say Carmine DiGiannomenico. I practiced a lot after the last one.
DiGiannomenico.
DiGiannomenico. Yeah. DiGiannomenico. Reading books, it was like, I don't know if you're like me, but I get like a sense of like, if the first couple you get to are kind of good, then you know, you're pumped and you sort of are enjoying the ones that come after it. And the first ones are bad, then it's sort of the same thing. And sometimes it's just kind of, you just don't notice. You're like, oh, I've read a bunch of books. And then I think, is there anything that's pick of the week? And I'm like, I don't know. I, you know, and you have to go back and sort of look at the list. And there are a few of them. I generally enjoyed my books. I don't think I loved this week, but I wouldn't say it was a bad week. And like, basically, Batman the Knight, you know, should be fairly rote. It is a story we've seen in various forms. It's about the time between when Batman decides he has to do something and when he becomes Batman. And he meets people out in the world, and he does training. But this one is, what is this, 12 issues? Like, it's
I think so, long. Yeah, 12, yeah.
Like, they're really spending time, 10 issues. They're 10. Really spending time with sort of each part. You know, he goes to the tie atop, I don't know, it's Tibetan, you know, monastery to learn how to fight. He meets Ducard. He has that French woman. He now he meets a KGB female, actually Charles Xavier, and he's also got his buddy that he met at the Tibetan fighting palace that they escaped together, which is the whole thing is fraught with waiting for a shoe to drop,
mm-hmm.
And there's a sense of tension that is behind sort of all the things that happen. Like he's dealing with bad folk, more or less, you know, yeah. And he's Batman. And there's a line in here. So basically he goes to see this KGB agent and the theme is
spycraft. Boy,
a lot happened in this issue actually. Yeah. So they get captured in Soviet Russia. It is Soviet, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And that tells you how old he is.
yeah, nebulous.
let's just ignore it. Move along. And you know, he's captured and tortured and after like a long, what seems like a long time.
Well, I'm sorry. No, it's not because there's a conversation here about how they're FSB now. So that was post-Soviet Russia.
Okay. But she was KGB. So.
She was KGB. Like a lot of people. Yeah.
They look pretty Soviet.
It's never not been Soviet Russia. They just haven't had the territory.
That's true. So this sort of Russian guard looking stereotype with a big mustache, you know, he's after him forever, and then Scooby-Doo removes the rubber mask, and we find out that this is the woman he's been searching for all along, and they go to her luxury apartment. Yep, and there's and she has a little woman spy cave that she introduces him to, and it's all about being in disguise and going undercover or in mufti, and getting what you want. And so she sets up little challenges that the two guys have to try to, you know, get an objective. So it's a locked office, you know, where a diplomat or somebody's keeping a list of names or something, and they have to get it. And the deal is that his friend is much better at lying and lying to people and pretending to be somebody else to get what he wants. And he's not, and Bruce is not great at that. And then it ends with, and the reason that I'm explaining this is because none of these things are things that I kind of would have expected to see. So at the end, there's this scene, and the two men are there, and his friend, Bruce's friend, has gotten the thing, and they're leaning over, and, you know, Bruce is doubting himself, and the friend leans over, and they have what looks to be a romantic moment. And I was like, and what I thought was, you're going to do Bruce Wayne is now bisexual in the past. And it didn't. It turns out he was seducing his friend so he could steal the book from his pocket,
mm-hmm.
and win the contest. And, you know, as a wrap up to a story, I was incredibly sort of taken by surprise, and it was an unexpected thing. And you are seeing we are so often not able to see development in these characters. And so in this, you're able to see this character develop by going backwards in time.
Yeah.
Chip Zdarsky, he's got the goods, and he's got the goods for Bruce Wayne. And John Domenico is, you know, he's a great artist. He's one of my favorite artists. I love when he shows up, and I read this issue, and I kind of had not noticed who had done it. And I was like, this is great. And I went, oh, okay, there it is. And I thought, oh no, I'm going to have to say it. And I'm not bad at saying things, but this one gets me when we're recording. I practiced beforehand, and then I botched it the first time I tried. You know, this should be, every week, it seems like a new Batman miniseries comes out.
Yes.
There's endless. Well, and it's really, it'd be really easy for me to just be like, I don't want to bother with any of it. But if you pick out a good one, you know, there's a reason this property has legs, and there's good people doing work. You know, there's some I've looked at and don't care about, but this is it. And if you compare this, because it's, I feel like it's sort of similar in tone, because it's kind of globe hopping to Tom Taylor's The Detective, which, what happened to that, by the way?
It ended. It was just a 5-issue miniseries.
It ended. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think I like this better than that, and I liked that.
Yeah. I mean, this is the classic, you know, pre-Batman story that you can't think too hard about, you know, otherwise it falls apart, because, you know, the way they have it here is there's like going to be dozens of people who know about Bruce Wayne becoming Batman. But, you know, I like the sort of anthology aspect of this, where every issue he learns a different aspect of being Batman from a different, you know, mysterious and or sexy European spy
or both,
or detective, or whatever it is. It's just it's a fun globetrotting sexy international adventure.
I mean, if you look at it a certain way, if you try not to worry about making sense of it, and you can focus on the things that don't make sense and actually enjoy that, mm-hmm. like that's, you know, that's the way that I tend to go at it. And then I think the other thing that lets me enjoy this in a way that maybe I wouldn't have in an earlier time in my life is that it isn't to me so much about explaining why Bruce Wayne is the way he is and this is how he got there, but it's sort of fun for me to figure out how the writer of the story is coming up with ways for this to be the case. Like, that is what's interesting. It's like, oh, they're doing a little spy story with him. Like, this doesn't all have to fit into who Batman is later, whatever. It's just the framework. And so it actually gives them a chance to do storytelling without really having to worry about continuity.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's something that sometimes we overlook, because the second that you start going, well, this doesn't make sense, how do you have time? Like, then it's terrible. And instead, you take that as a feature, not a bug, and you can really enjoy it.
I think the idea that Bruce could goes into a club and can't pick up a girl is funny. Because he's handsome and charming, and he'd at least get someone to talk to him. Like, they made him so incompetent in the club where it was like he couldn't even talk to women. When he was basically seducing that, you know, sexy older French cat burglar just a couple issues ago. So there was a couple of things here where I was like, but overall.
There's a bit in this, I don't remember exactly what the line is, but there is something where she's like, you have to be able to act like a charming playboy.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, this is how he learns to do that, and it doesn't come naturally to him. And I actually think that's really interesting.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I mean,
but it's not even that he could do it. Like, if he hadn't gone through all this, he wouldn't have been that guy.
Correct. Yeah.
And I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and there's a lot of the, you know, we get a little bit more of the mythos with each issue. And here she, you know, she calls her apartment the cave, and she talks, you know, teaches him how to be the playboy. So he is Batman. He just hasn't figured it out yet, but he has to create Bruce Wayne, you know, which is interesting, which is one of the things that makes Batman so interesting, is that he has to figure out how to be who he was born to be and then who he became when he was 8. And that's fun. And you said the art's terrific. Everything is interesting angles, and, you know, or the camera's pulled way back, or it's real close. Like, D'Angelo is terrific, and overhead shots. It's a fun book to look at. We should also mention Ivan Plasencia on the colors, which is also really strong.
There's a lot of syllables in the art team.
Yeah, Pat Brousseau. Everyone, chill out.
One of the other, if you, I can't remember, I think it was last week, there was a page from a comic book that I read that was just a lettering nightmare. It was just like a whole thing of medium shots and text all over the page, and I didn't even want to read it. And as I'm flipping through this book, you would have seen this on my Instagram account, but as I'm flipping through this book, there are a couple of pages that are fairly heavy dialogue, and it works because they know what they're doing. And as I'm sort of just flipping through the pages and I am defocusing my eyes, I can also see, this is credit for Pat Brousseau to a certain extent, is that the word balloons and the dialogue have a flow to them that becomes visual, even though there are a lot of word balloons. Right. And it's this really subtle thing that I don't see unless I sort of am looking for it. So, like, I see a page and it's got a ton of sort of explication and just going through. Okay, are you looking at page 13 in the digital book?
13.
It's okay. So what you've got here is a combination, and I don't know his name. I don't know this friend's name. But there's a conversation that goes on in this room, and the word balloons actually go between the faces. That's not supposed to happen. That's like a rule of thumb. You don't do that. But if you follow with your finger down the page, that snakes and it creates a perfect line for you to read these things. And the compositions aren't particularly interesting on the surface, but they are. There's a symmetry to the page. There is, like, all of the things work in concert. And it's one of those things where you will read a page like this and not think about it, which is the way it's supposed to work. But then you back up a little bit and you look at the bits of it, you know, the way that it's formed, and there's a shape, there's an hourglass to the whole composition. There's, you know, there's a bit of light over his eyes. There's a Batman foreshadow over to the left of the top panel, which is part of the second panel. There's a face that they've stuck there. Like, they're guiding your eyes around. This is the storytelling part of things. And when you have really skilled, you know, craftspeople, you know, like, these are things like that you don't see, or, but you feel them. And then, so immediately, next page from that, you're in the party, bright lights, like, they change the tone completely. The camera angles all change, but it's just little things like that. They read so well that I don't notice a page full of dialogue. You know, and it's also constructed in such a way that it's not like blop, 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 where there's somebody just trying to shove, you know, words in somewhere that nobody left room for and where there was too many of them.
Yeah, I mean, that, as long as you have a high level of craft, you can fix any issue. And I like how that page that you're talking about, it's all gray and dark and shadowy. And then, as you said, you turn the page and it's all Euro Club Technicolor you know, party scene. It's a very well done book.
It is. In fact, if you sort of just flip through the pages, and I don't know if this is intentional, but it works that way. If you sort of flip through the pages from beginning to end quickly, you actually see the time of day change. Mm-hmm. Like as you go through it, it goes into daylight and then to sunset and then nighttime. And then they're in the dark room and then they go to the club with the lights and then it's morning and it gets brighter and brighter. Like it goes up and down. It's like somebody's running a fader on the pages. Again, you know, that's just being conscious of your coloring and your lighting, I think. And it's just one of those, like, it just reads so easily that you don't even notice it. Yeah. And that's a real skill. That's a real craft. And I was totally into it, you know, but not even the way at the end. I was like, that was great. I just sort of looked back and went, I think I enjoyed that issue more than anything else. And that is how you get to be pick of the week. I did not plan to have any of that conversation.
I don't think people realize the emotional anguish we go through every week trying to figure out the pick of the week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little one act play every week.
It's cool because, you know, like in this instance, you can read the book and be like, oh, I enjoyed that. And then you go back and you start examining it, like when we start talking about it here, and you start seeing all of these little things that are being done right. And you go, oh, that's why. Yeah. You know, that's why that's good. That's why this other one's not.
Well, as you said, there are things that you shouldn't see or recognize upon first glance.
Yeah.
And it's like the score of a film or the editing of a film. Like, it's just, you should just be in the story. And it should work well enough, so well that you don't realize it,
which is so antithetical for like artisans, you know. And you know, like it sucks if you're a letterer, because if you're doing your job, no one will ever know you're there,
right?
You know what I mean? And you know, you wanted to draw, you want to make a big sound effect splash and be like, wow, that's great. But even that, you shouldn't notice. It should just be organic to the scene. But it takes a ton of skill.
And, for sure,
and you know it. You know it when it's not there. You might not know what it is, but you'll be like, something's wrong here. And so people will, you know, will notice, like, well, you guys are nitpicking these little things from time to time. And it's like, well, yeah, but those are the things. They interrupt the flow. They change things. Anyway.
Right. Let's talk about newly showered with Eisner's Nightwing number 92. Just the Eisner Awards nominations came out this week, and Nightwing got a whole bunch of them. Which was, I guess, maybe
surprising isn't the right word, but I just think it tends to be one of those books that maybe people don't notice unless you're reading and you're like, oh, this is good. And it's kind of cool to see that other people have noticed it's really good.
I just think it's funny because anytime we shower praise on a book, we're like, this book's going to win Eisner's. We're always wrong.
Right.
So for once we were right.
I mean, let's get right to it.
Yeah.
There's one important issue that I think that we should talk about that had to deal with this book, that the whole thing. All right, so there's a little flashbacky scene in the first two pages, which is beautifully colored and drawn. First three, four, five, six pages.
It's okay. Like,
apparently that was longer than I thought.
It's like a third of the book.
Right, that's fine. And then page 10, we come to Pleasant Day, or Present Day. It's a Pleasant Day also.
It is nice out.
And over to the right, we see Marv and George Pizza, where you see Marv Wolfman and George Perez. And this would have been drawn and put in there before he'd passed away.
I like that he sort of lives on as a background character in this book.
Yeah, he'll have streets named after him in Gotham for the rest of time.
Yep.
And there's a little girl eating a slice of pizza.
Yep.
And I don't want to fail to give credit where it is due.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the correct way to hold and eat a slice of fresh pizza.
If it's not folded, yes. Absolutely.
Right. Okay, but she's a little girl.
To be folded. There's some people who don't eat pizza folded, and they're weirdos, but that's fine.
Well, that's, you know what? That's a pizza that depends on the size. It's not all pizza can be, well, I guess it could, but it's a small pizza.
Fine. I've got no issues here.
Listen, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that they don't listen to this show. After multiple grievous assaults on the sanctity of pizza eating, they just nail this.
They nailed it.
100%.
I'm going to need to see Nightwing eat a slice of pizza with his costume on before I can make that statement, but, you know.
Somebody's paying attention. Somebody made a correction. And it honors the memory of George Perez.
I agree.
And pizza.
I loved, obviously, the flashback. This little flashback would have been my pick of the week. I had an interesting thought about Nightwing this week. This was a great issue. Bruno Redondo's back. Also, Eisner nominated for art.
Good.
After being off a couple issues. Nightwing, to me, if I can use a really, really labored food analogy, is like a delicious
pizza
cone of ice cream that occasionally has a rock in it, a little tiny pebble.
Wow.
And that and it's not the book's fault. It's the wider DC's fault. So, like, I'm reading the book, and I see in the credits page, you know, Nightwing created by Marv Wolfman, George Perez, and Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. I was like, oh, cool, Superman's going to be in the book. And then I get there, and I'm like, well, fuck, it's Jonathan. Like, I just forget. I keep forgetting, you know? Also, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster didn't create Jonathan. And then, you know, Bruce Wayne shows up at this gala that's honoring Alfred, and he's looking all, you know, cool. And one of the things I like about Bruno Redondo is, much like Jamie McKelvey, he actually draws people to look really fashionable to now.
Yeah,
they look, and look like they're wearing clothes now, as opposed to whenever the artist was young, you know?
Right.
And so Bruce has got the cowl neck, you know, sweater and the cool jacket and it's like, all right, he's looking awesome. And then they make a crack about how he's broke. And I was like, oh, fuck, there's another rock in the ice cream. Like, I just, all the dumb shit that's happening in DC occasionally pops up here. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. How does Bruce afford those stylish and designer clothes? You know, like, how is he still being Batman if he's broke? Like, why are we still doing this thing that was supposed to be for future state that never happened? If that's over with, why is this still happening? It doesn't affect anything other in the story. It doesn't add anything to the story. It's just stupid. And so it's just stuff like that keeps bugging me. But it's not the book's fault. The book was fine. It was good. It was very good.
I really enjoy this book. And, yeah. Bruno Redondo, you know, when he shows up, man, does it come to life.
Oh,
and
for
there's
sure.
Just, there's a couple of pages, and there's a page 19, where he rips the mask off one of the folks who are trying to trash the site. And you know, the panels shrink away to the right side, which looks like a very Infinite Crisis kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just so thoughtful. And even the basic two-page spread.
I literally was about to say the word thoughtful. Like, that is exactly when he's on the book. And this is no knock on, they had that fill-in artist for the two issues of The Flash, and that was good. But it's a different level of craft when Redondo's on the book.
It's not just storytelling, because you have to be able to do that first. You have to be able to do, you know, characters, figures, anatomy, and storytelling first. If you can't do those, anything else you do, you know, isn't great.
It's a waste of time.
But he does that, and then he adds motion and design with those elements incorporated. So there's a page, I mean, there's a really obvious sort of double page spread. He jumps off the side of the building and is silhouetted by the moon and whatever. Yeah. It's a nice poster. But the page after that, where he sort of falls down, and
yeah,
this shouldn't work. This is left-hand panel stacking, but it does. So I want to give credit where that is. It is in the first panel. I'm looking at page 18, and like, if you can follow at home, it would be good. The first panel, the rope is coming down. All you see is the sky and the rope, and it is loose. Second panel, it is pulled taut and twanging back and forth. Third panel, as we go down, and the bad guy is in the forefront of all these, because these are just a single shot but split time-wise. You know, and then he's swinging down. Just a beautiful composition, beautiful coloring as the sunset comes up from, or the sunrise comes up below those people. You know, and then you look at the second panel, and again, these are all sort of tall vertical panels. And you see the line of the rope as it goes through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 bad guys who have all been taken out by this one swing. And then he lands in the panel. You know, there's dust kicked up everywhere. And then the last panel is a bunch of sound effects.
Oh, I fucking love that.
That page is masterful.
This page is Eisner worthy. This is, I think the first three... Look, this is all amazing composition, and this is, again, why Bruno Redondo is one of my favorite artists and very, very worthy to be Eisner nominated. Is, you mentioned that first sequence is one panel chopped to three, and it takes place in three different times. It's almost like Dunkirk, you know, how you play with time. And I don't know the last time I saw a panel like that, where I'm giving credit also to Tom Taylor, I'm sure, who wrote it this way, is that when's the last time you saw a panel show time and movement like that just through the course of chopping into three sections? And just so thoughtfully with just showing how the rope is, how it's loose and then taut, and it's just incredible. And then I love that they embrace things like the 66-esque Biff Bam Pow, you know, iconography here too, in the book itself.
And this is a story element to this too, is that this is a reference to the beginning of the book where young Robin, you know, jumped into the fray and everyone was like, no, don't do it. And he got the shit beat out of him.
Yeah.
This is the same thing as he jumps into the fray, you know, but he's like, but I'm more experienced now. Right. And, you know, there's not a ton of dialogue. It's inner monologue. It's captions. But it does a job, right. You know, and it does what it's supposed to. It's great. And the thing is, comics, mainstream comics, superhero comics, I'm not going to say it's the audience's fault, but like when you talk about like a event book, a big thing, something that you want a bunch of people to go see, to go pick up and read, you know, that's all about pinups and poster shots and a bunch of superheroes standing in, you know, punching somebody like with splash pages and whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, this should be the thing, you know, this is virtuoso shit. And it isn't doesn't move units necessarily, but you know, it doesn't get better than that. Mainstream superhero comics do not get better than this page.
You know, and this book, when it's Taylor and Redondo together, and again, the fill-in artist was terrific too, but when it's Taylor and Redondo together, this book is the best book being made.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're like, why isn't that pick of the week? Well, it isn't, but.
Listen, sometimes things happen.
Yeah. No, this was the other one. It was between the two. But I expect this to be good, and I think that's the difference. Right. You know, like, I was like, okay, this is what I wanted it to be out of this, and it isn't really a surprise.
So with Fantastic Four 688, we are further into the Reckoning War. I still really enjoy this, and there's some fantastic scenes and sequences. I'm just holding on by the skin of my teeth with this.
This was the first Fantastic Four in a while, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to have to push through this one, I guess.
Yeah, there was a lot of long alien names and terms and weapon names, and I was just like, okay, I'm just going to roll with all this stuff that I'm not necessarily all understanding, because, you know, there's Great Doom in here, Great Nick Fury.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That said... A lot of times when you get a story like this is in the middle of an event that you don't really know the stakes, characters, you know, there's hard for anything to grab onto. But the stuff I like about the book is all still in here that I'm grabbing onto.
Yeah.
I get, oh, Johnny Storm is with all the people from his lady friend's planet. There's an amazing Doom sequence through this whole thing.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know who that bad guy is. I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what book I missed. But, like, I'm down with it.
And Invisible Woman is a sort of a callback to that miniseries that was good a couple years ago, where she turned out she was a spy. Yeah. So she does kind of, you know, she's been skulking around
Mark
Watcher
Wade.
Headquarters. Yeah, that Mark Wade book. Like this, all kinds of great stuff in here. It's just that there's a lot of, you know, badooms. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the right word or the character. They're not the
badoon. It's N, I think.
Whatever.
I don't know. There's a ton. I was like, wait, is that Watcher stuff in this one? Yeah, that was in this one too. Oh, and you know, they've got Clockwork Orange Watcher thing going. I read that one, by the way, you told me to read. Yeah. I guess it was Reckoning War Zero.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good. You know, there was two Watchers at some point, and she shoots
the bad one. She shoots one in the back of the head, which I was like, whoa.
I thought Watu got shot, but it wasn't.
Yeah, they all look the same.
It turns out they need name tags. The Watchers.
Or bad facial hair, which is something I have, but...
So I didn't love, you know, how... But I did like it. I still enjoyed it. Like, the book is, you know, it continues to be a thing that I really look forward to. It's probably it's the most gosh of Marvel right now, you could by far.
The Proskillion and the Encyclopedia Universum and the... Kokoro thing, the helmet has a name. Like, they've all got these long names with many consonants. And it's just, I finished it. I was like, whew, I am wiped.
I assume that's what it was like reading Marvel in the 60s for the first time. I'm like, I don't know what fucking Ultimate Nullifier is. Let's stick around.
Right. No, I did enjoy these shows. Just like, wow, there's a lot happening. It's a good thing that you're right. You've got 40 plus issues of history with these characters written by this one writer. So all the character stuff really works really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just hope that Johnny doesn't get back together with Sky, because that was the only downside of the whole run.
That's not the downside. The downside is that he's still like burning incredibly hotly, as seemingly we just forgot about it, and I want that part over.
Yeah.
Because what was the other book? There was some other book we read that was like in the way in the future, and he was still hot, and I was like, oh no.
Oh, right.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
Right, and then this week there was also the Marvels, where he was normal, and I was like, there you go. There you go.
Well, there's a book I can't hold on to at all. Like I'm 10 in, yeah. But there's a thread somewhere.
The other side of the coin. I think I read them back to back.
It was.
I think that's why I was exhausted. I read Marvels and Fantastic Four back to back, and I was like, "Woo, take a breather."
That's a lot.
Gotta have a drink. I hate this place. Number one, the new Kyle Starks book from Image Comics was drawn by Artiom Toplin, not his normal art team. But Lilo Roger on colors, and Pat Brousseau again on letters. And
when you hear the name Pat Brousseau, do you think of a Cajun person?
Yes.
I think of that guy from what was the Donald Logue show?
Oh, it was Terriers.
Terriers. I think of that dude.
Maybe that is him.
He was Cajun in the Vampire Show, True Blood. I guess, but that's
he was Pat Brousseau. He had a little bit of an accent, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sure, we're going to do them colors right up now. That's what letters. Sorry.
I wasn't going to read this because it was billed as Kyle Starks doing horror, and I was like, well,
Yeah, but he gets
I thought,
pass.
You know what, I really like Kyle Starks' work. I think he's a really terrific writer, so at least let me give it a shot. And I'm glad I did, because I did like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. I had sort of seen at some point it was horror, and I forgot it was horror. And then, like, in the middle, when it starts to go that way, I was like, oh, right, that's what this kind of is. But the setup of it, you know, it's a haunted house, haunted farm kind of book.
Did you read the essay in the back?
No, of course not.
Okay, so he said, basically, I wanted to try to do a horror book. And
I did read that.
I read the first paragraph. All the tropes in. So it's a haunted house and a ghost story and a terror in the woods and aliens and a thriller with the bank robber. So he's like, and that's kind of why I like Kyle Starks. He's like, oh, I want to do horror. I'm going to do all the horror. And so, you know, it worked. It's the thing that's, no matter what genre it is that he's very, very good at scene construction and very, very good at rhythm and pacing. Not to mention dialogue and humor and stuff, but like I found myself really in the beginning sequence where so three guys have currently robbed the bank and they end up fighting over the money and two of them die, and the construction of that sequence was great, including especially the end where the tentacles grab the one guy and then the guy with the slashed up face shoots at it and then squeals off in his car. I thought that was such a great page.
Oh, wow, look at the lettering on the squeal.
Yeah,
it curves around and is backwards.
That was like, oh, that's a Kyle Starks page. And then you turn the page and you can hear the sound of the gas going into the side of the car. And it's just like, you know, you can imagine it visually. He's very good at this.
I think my favorite page is she wakes up in the middle of the night and the cows are mooing. She goes into the barn. It's not supposed to be funny, but it's page 15. Mm-hmm. There's just two round-eyed, freaked-out cows.
It is funny.
With little Three Stooges Mo haircuts.
So the story is these two women, they're a couple. One has inherited this cow farm from her great aunt or uncle. And so these two are clearly, you know, urban lesbian couple showing up in the small town to take over this farm.
Let's talk about the stereotype breaking of her black lesbian survivalist gun-toting girlfriend. I was like, that's all of the things.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Is that the twist is that the black lesbian is the doomsday prepper with the duffel bag full of guns and the ripped arms. You know, they go to this farm, and the guy at the store who's directing them to the farm is like, oh, you're going out to that farm? And then I like that they drove right past the crime scene from the night before with the bank robbers and didn't notice the blood and the stuff everywhere. That was a nice touch. And then, you know, it's the classic thing. There's little things that are off about the farm at first. You know, she has weird memories of she's only been there one time, and she remembers that her aunt and uncle were freaked out that they showed up, and that she remembered her dog going crazy barking at the woods. And then they find a room that's like not a safe room, but it's soundproofed, and it's got miles and miles of videotapes and a VCR and a TV, and all of Facts of Life is there. And
like, yeah, you think it's going to be like creepy videotapes,
right?
You know, like that they made of, but no, they're just TV shows and shit. The whole thing was unpredictable and unexpected.
Right.
It was like there's the tropes that are in there, but they're not used in the way where you sort of go, okay, so this goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, that's how the story goes.
They find out that basically once you live in this house, you can't leave it because of the ghosts and all the other things. And so that's why, you know, there's tons of videotapes because they got to watch. The people who live there have to do something. And so, I mean, it was good. I'm looking at page 18 on your digital reader, and look, I mean, the shot of the ghosts at the window, it's a great drawing. It's a really great drawing. It's impressionistic, but it's creepy, and
I think
the art's really strong.
Yeah, I think the way that they drew the horror and the ghost part works, and the color adds to it a lot. There, that sickly green, and there's an alien over the. It's a lot. It's a lot here, but it works for it.
And I think that's part of the fun of it, from Kyle Stark's perspective, is that it's like the ghosts all show up at the window, and then the alien ship above them shoots the light in the house, and then there's the horned creature in the woods watching. It's like everything is happening.
And the response is, we made a little room where you can watch sitcoms.
And then the crew they hired to work the farm shows up, and they're all like, not the crew you'd expect. There's like...
No.
There's like a guy that looks like Killer Mike with skinny jeans on.
Big Mike and Ramon.
And then there's a guy who looks like a Gen Z hipster who's going to run the show. And then,
Big
of course,
Mike and Ramon. They know Fuck Tarkington.
And then the guy...
Is Kyle Starks the best at naming?
Yes, he is.
Yes.
And then the guy with the scratched up face in the beginning who is back to work the farm because somewhere is where the money from the robbery was buried. So, you know, I wasn't expecting to read this. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it, but I did.
I mean, the moment that I saw Kyle Stark's name on it, I went, all right, you know, I'm in. And then it was his battle to lose, basically.
Right.
And it was good. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Josh, I don't know if you noticed, but it's heating up outside.
Woo!
When it comes to stylish essentials, perfect for the hotter days ahead, there's no better option than Mack Weldon. From hanging at home to the much-needed vacation, the conference room to the happy hour, they've got you covered. The innovative daily wear system takes the guesswork out of getting dressed, even for the most indecisive of guys, which is great. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the winter wear. You know, we have a lot of Mack Weldon winter wear, from the sweatshirts to the sweatpants to the Radius pants, the sort of indoor-outdoor pant. But I'm ready now to break out my Mack Weldon swimsuit. I know you and I both have the same pattern, the green palm frond one.
Mine's blue.
Oh, I got the green one. So there you go. That's how you tell us apart.
We can be together then.
That's all I want, Josh. That's all I want.
I know.
So, you know, you've got really thoughtfully designed, outdoor activewear for the summertime. I love that swimsuit's got a pocket that closes. So I can put stuff
the
in
zippers.
There. Like zippers. You know, you're not. I never understood why the swimsuits had the Velcro pockets, because it seems fraught with danger. But zippers got you covered. You've got the t-shirts. I've got a couple of Mack Weldon t-shirts. They're. I was reaching in to my t-shirt drawer the other day, and I saw a black shirt, and I grabbed it, and I felt it. I was like, oh, I realized that must be my. I literally said that must be my Mack Weldon black V-neck, because it's such a nice soft cotton to it, as opposed to the
I
other ones.
Too. I have a bunch of black t-shirts in my drawer, and when I need to know which one it is, I reach out and I go, oh, that's the Mack Weldon one.
Yeah, same I thing. Literally went, oh, because it feels cooler.
Yeah.
Than my other t-shirts. Yep. I don't know what they do, what kind of magic, what kind of alchemy they've got in those shirts, but even when it's been sitting in my drawer for the winter, I was like, oh, it's still
at least twice in the past few weeks. I have gotten dressed, and there's one day I was head to toe, except for the socks, with, I had the Radius pants and the underwear and had the t-shirt. And then I had the sweatshirt on the top of it. And I was like, I should text Connor and let him know that I'm fully in the Mack Weldon daily wear system. And you should know that I didn't do that. And I saved the reveal for now, not on purpose, but that's where we are. But yeah, I've thought, oh, I'm doing it. I'm doing the system. I'm halfway into the system right now. I'm loath. It's going to be in the 90s this weekend here.
Yeah.
And I can't wear my Ace sweatshirt that I'm wearing most days.
Sure.
Most days now. And that's going to upset me. I'm wearing it right now.
We should talk to them about getting you a modeling contract.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to tone up a bit.
Mack Weldon's premium polos.
You know what? Do you guys need the regular guy?
Right.
Because I can be that regular, like you know, fairly fashion conscious, you know, well dressed, good looking guy who likes chicken fingers.
Exactly. Mack Weldon's premium polos easily elevate your plans with fabric technology they built in to keep you comfortable as the temperature rises. Their lightweight silver peak polo and new super soft Pima t-shirt polo are great for summer. You know, wear them everywhere. Wear them with the Maverick Tech Chino shorts and the Radius Flex short. I have a Radius Flex short. You know, wear them with those. You look great. Two other must-haves for the season and by the season. I mean beach season or pool season. Whatever body water you prefer, check out their board shorts and swim trunks. A combo of performance stretch and a slick design. They're great gear for when you're taking time off. So check out Mack Weldon for yourself and save 20% off your first order. Visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboyMac and a promo code iFanboyMac. That's M-A-C-K. Again, that's MackWeldon.com/iFanboyMac and a promo code iFanboyMac for 20% off. Stock up on the warm weather essentials you've been missing. I really enjoy that new promo code.
Yeah, you like saying it because it's like it sounds like Return of the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to read it. And you can tell your wife that I read it because she's like, she wants to know what you think. And when Connor says that she wants something, it's more like a command than a request. And I just thought, oh, I'm gonna hear about this. So I'll just read it. So this one's for you, Megan. Bill Willingham and Mark Buckingham and Andrew Laiahola. I'm not looking at it, so I can't tell if that's exactly the right pronunciation, but I think it is. Are back on, yeah, Laiahola. I like that name. That's
good name.
A fun one to say. Yep. And Lee Lowry, John Collars, and the incomparable Todd Klein on letters.
You're
the
you're
full
not wrong.
Team is back. I'm not. I there's no irony. There's no joke about that. Todd Klein is incomparable. He is the best. And every time I see that he's still doing a book, I feel a little bit of joy, genuine joy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I didn't read. Fables ended at 75, and then they brought it back. I think I read a handful of issues after 75, and I think I had skidded into the end of the first arc. It wasn't that I didn't like it; it's just I'd had enough, and so I didn't really like it. It ended.
Yep.
It ended. It didn't need to come back. Things rarely need to come back, even if they're good or not. Like even if you thought the ending was too early, you know, you got a Deadwood movie situation. Like, where it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool, but you ended it. I had prepared to walk away. We had the thing. So they've now come back for the second time after ending it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is going to be a 12-issue series. The good news is that, you know, having been fairly familiar with Fables, because I read 75-plus issues of it, I knew kind of who everybody was. And if I didn't know exactly, then, you know, I'd sort it out. And basically this we have in the middle of New York City, Fable Town, which was hidden there, is now visible to everybody. So the world knows about magic and the Fable Town is a smoking wreck. And so part of it is that the world has to deal with the fact that there's people and there's magic, as if the sheet of Harry Potter has been pulled back and all
sure.
the muggles understand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part of the story is that Snow White and Bigby and their three kids trek off into the woods to find their ancestral homelands and set up a new place. And there's some other story with a girl who I don't know.
Did you enjoy it?
Kind of. I kind of enjoy. Like, I wasn't as lost or annoyed. I wasn't annoyed, but I expected I might be annoyed, but I wasn't. It felt familiar. I mean, like, there's no loss of, you know, Buckingham is still great, and Lee Lowridge is always great, and, you know, the Willingham does a great job with great. All these, you know, characters and his dialogue and you know, he's a compelling writer from moment to moment. There's a couple of things, you know, things in here that did pique my interest.
So
am I going to read the next one? Maybe somewhere between maybe and probably.
You're a Fables guy. Quite famously on the show, we used to make fun of you for it, mostly because it ever got made people angry, and so we kept doing it. It's just people don't realize if you get angry, we're going to keep doing it.
Sure.
I just realized while you're talking, doing the math, that if the book originally ended at 75 and we're at 151, they've done more issues post-ending than they did pre.
That, as of this issue, yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yep. And then there was also other... There were other series too.
Sure, it was Jack.
Like
of Fables.
So, Jack of Fables went 60-ish or so. And that was great, and I think there was others too. So there's a lot invested in this, and you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but you don't see Bill Willingham's name on a bunch of other stuff. So can't blame him for going back. Well, what if I do this? Will you pay me then? Yes. Okay, let's do it. Right. You know, you gotta have a career. You know, it was if you like Fables, I think you're gonna like this. If you don't ever watch, if you've never, you know, I'd say go get the first trade and see if you like that and read it and get here. Don't start here.
Right.
It's good. I think that if you're a Fables fan, you'll be good.
Wait a minute. What was the branding on the book? Because it's not Vertigo.
I assume it's...
Is it Black Label?
I had that question. Yep. Black Label. But it's in the standard comic format, not the...
Sure.
Not the magazine format.
The whole world is weird.
Listen, Black Label is Vertigo. It's all it is. Let's just accept it. It's Vertigo, but they do more DC superhero stuff within Vertigo because Karen Berger wouldn't do that.
It's sexy. That's it. Vertigo. Batman, Superman, World's Finest, number 3. First of all, I was sure this was like the 5th issue of this book already. I was like, only 3? And I love that Mark Waid is like... throwing everything into the pot where he's like basically saying, this is what you've been missing. Cause so here we've had Batman, we've had Superman, we've had Supergirl, we've had Robin, we've had Doom Patrol. I almost said Middleman again. And now we've got Wonder Woman and Flash and Green Lantern. He's just like, let's just toss it all in. This is all the stuff I could have been doing this whole time. And you missed out. And I don't know that this would have been my
there's
pick.
An element of spite to it for you.
Yeah.
There's just a bit of, oh yeah, we'll take this.
Exactly. So I that's all I really wanted to say. This was another great issue. I've been loving this book. This is a great week for me because Nightwing and World's Finest seem to be on the same monthly release schedule, and so I'm at least going to probably really enjoy two of the books I read on that month or that week of the month because I just love this book so much.
I think I don't love it. That's fine. You do. To me, I was like, well, this is an awful lot. This had a little bit of the Fantastic Four feeling for me.
Oh, for sure.
A ton in here.
I couldn't tell you anything about the villain or what's going on. I just love that he writes the character so well.
That's fair.
And Dan Mora is terrific. I would be very happy to slow down with the next arc. Slow it down. But
bring it in.
I still am loving it. Joe Hill's Reign, number 5, the final issue of the 5-issue miniseries written by David M. Bower, based on a short story by Joe Hill, with art by Zoe Thorogood, who plays a mean guitar.
When I wrote it down.
It's all I could think of.
I walk up to the bartender, man.
She's named Thorogood. And Sean Lee on letters. I still stand by what I think is that I thought the first issue was a perfect little short story. Yep. I liked this whole miniseries. I thought it was well done. But I don't know that I got anything out of 2 through 5 that I didn't get in the first issue. Like, I think if it had been a 1-issue thing, it would have been like an Eisner-worthy single short story.
Yeah.
But again, I thought the rest of it was good. I just thought everything that happened in issue 1, and it was perfect. And 2 through 5 were good.
I think that the fact that 2 through 5 existed, though, I think it was a good ending.
Yeah,
it gave me a little more. It gave you some explanation, which I don't actually think we needed, but no. I wasn't unhappy with it. You got one of those classic, like, you know, and then you see all the themes flash together, and you put it together. A little convenient, whatever. You get a killing of one good person who's left by a machete. It's just like, geez.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
It's that kind of book. So, I think what I would have wanted, and I think that we got in 2 through 5, was to see more of the world, and I want to see more of the world. I don't think that I should be shown more of the world, by the way, right, or given more explanation. But
Joe Hill's Reign 2, number one?
No, but, you know, if there was like a backup series through the, like, series of stories through the back of these, they're like shit that's going on in other places in the world. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be really interesting. I just because I think that this effect on the, this is a such an interesting concept. You know, it's global warming made climate change made physical. You know, it's like, no, there's actually so knives coming from the sky.
Yeah, I expect now to look out the window and just see crystal rain, because that's where we're at now.
Yeah, but you know, great. The experience of the 5 issues and just 5 was really wonderful and enjoyable. And I got to meet a new artist, and she said, "Look, man, come down here."
So those are the books we want to talk about. But patreon.com/ifanboy, that's where you can vote to add a book to the rundown. And for the third time in the history of the patron pick was Savage Avengers. So the Savage Avengers lobby is strong.
So basically what you're saying is that the iPhone boy patrons are trying to make Savage Avengers happen.
Including the last issue, but I wasn't on that show, of Savage Avengers 28. And then we had the one that was the Conan in jail one, which I did read. But this is the first issue of a new volume of Savage Avengers, with written by David Pipozzi. And art by Carlos Magno, who we know very well, and colors by Espen Grundjert.
Grundeturn,
and letters by Travis Lanham. I didn't like this.
I didn't not like it because it was terrible. I did not like it because there was nothing that was there to grab me.
Yes.
It wasn't a bad comic.
I won't say that. It was fine. It just... You tell me why you didn't like it, and I'll tell you why I didn't like it.
So when I looked on Comixology before I knew that this was going to be the pick of the, or the patron pick, it is not the pick of the week. No. I looked, there was one review, and I thought, oh, let's see what it is. And it was, because it was like 2 stars, and it was just like, there are no concepts in here that I haven't seen 100 times before. And it's just all the same stereotypes and tropes. And I was like, you know what, Comixology reviewer, you nailed it. It was like, and it was all of these tertiary Marvel characters and properties thrown in with exactly the same problems that they ever had. And then when I started reading it, because I had to, I decided not to read it based on that. Because I there was something about it that I was like, I feel like this rings true. Mm-hmm. And as I started to read it, it was written full on, not, I think it's non-ironic, but you could take it that way, but full on serious, overwrought Robert E. Howard.
Yeah.
You know, that. And that works for a Conan book.
Yes.
And I don't think it worked here.
Yeah. That was my first moment, was it was written almost like History of the DC Universe, the book they put out after Crisis to make sense of the world. And that was written as sort of like a academic remove. Mm-hmm. And this felt like the way this was written, where the overwrought caption boxes told me the story, felt like the whole story was like an arm's length. And then I found about halfway through, I went back and looked, who wrote that other Savage Dragon books? I went back and looked, all right, this is Jerry Duggan. And that one had Jerry Duggan's sense of humor and irony in it.
Yes.
Which I think a book that features Conan the Barbarian in 2023, to wielding a broadsword and wearing a loincloth needs to have, because it's inherently silly.
I see what they're going for, and I think it's possible. I think it's possible that there is an element of irony to this that didn't come through.
Maybe.
I would think, unless it was taken super serious, but you can either take this super seriously and really mean it, which is ridiculous, or you can take it super seriously and recognize that that's ironic. And I feel like they're actually taking it super seriously. And so that's why that doesn't work.
I actually didn't mind necessarily the character makeup. I like all these lower tier Marvel characters, it's fun to have them in a group. It feels like an old 80s event, you know. Cloak and Dagger, when's the last time I read anything with them in it? Elektra as Daredevil filling that role. I don't know who the hell this Hulk Wolverine character is. I've never seen them before. That was very confusing. I don't know why or what the hell that sword is that Black Knight was using. Wasn't the Ebony Blade?
I did not like that sword.
No.
It's the He-Man sword.
Yeah, I mean, I know from that other miniseries we read of his that his daughter is now also the Black Knight, so I guess she has the Ebony Blade, but, like, that's dumb.
I still felt like I had missed something. I was like, I read all those Black Knight books. Why don't I know what he's talking about?
It ended with her taking up the mantle, because, of course...
I kind of remember that.
Of course, the let's take away another beloved Marvel character. But he's still here with a dumb sword. Just give him a regular sword at that point. Like, what is he holding?
Yeah, that's a bad sword.
So the only thing about I'll say through all this is, and then there's Anti-Venom, who's stupid. And,
you know what? I don't mind that so much as that's one of the least objectionable things.
Well, you were a big fan of that his book.
I like the Flash Thompson book. Yeah. So the point is, like, I get where it's coming from. I know who it is. I know that it's Flash Thompson. I know that I hate Deathlok. I hate Deathlok. they're the good guys in the other book, and he's a bad guy here, and they're gross-looking, and I don't understand it. I don't know where they come from. It feels like a 90s thing that won't go away. And that's... Yeah, that's my own thing.
The whole thing, you know, with this book has been that Conan the Barbarian has been the modern day. And he yearns for the plains of Hyperia, or Hyboria, whatever the name is of the thing.
Hyboria.
And so Deathlok, obviously, is a time traveler. And Deathlok's our legion. There's not just one Deathlok. And so in the course of this fight, because Deathlok has shown up to kill Conan because Conan is a time anomaly. Is it Black Knight that stabs him? Somebody stabs Deathlok. Yeah, Conan does with his sword.
Yeah.
And it shoots them all into a vortex. And he wakes up. Back home on the battle scarred steps, but now he's also with Anti-Venom and Dagger. So they're in the they're back in the Hyborian age, but everyone. So, I mean, that's fairly interesting.
I was, as you mentioned, I had forgotten that that's how it ended, but what I was thinking just now is, like, you should have done that on page 5.
Yes. I didn't need the whole giant fight scene, but
yep.
The other thing that's mixed up in all this is that this is, either this week or the week before, they announced that Conan and Marvel are parting ways.
Oh, yeah.
So the solo book is definitely ending. King Conan's the final solo book. But they're trying to negotiate a contract to keep him in this Savage Avengers book. But if that doesn't happen, then this is all moot. You think you'd find that contract out before you started the new volume?
If you look at the cover,
mm-hmm.
and you see Deathlok's there... And he's pointing at us. It's a really boring cover by Lanil Yu, who used to be a very exciting artist and now just doesn't seem to care. Look at Deathlok's tiny gun, right?
Yeah.
And then flip to the very first page is the
same gun but giant.
Yeah, it's huge. And throughout the book, like, that's consistent. It's really big, but if you go for one of the others, like, you know, like, there's one place, like, I kind of see why it's a tiny gun, because it would go off but let it go off. Like, if there's one place to put a giant gun, it's the cover of the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, also Black Knight has a regular sword in the cover.
Is that what Anti-Venom looks like? Does he turn into that?
I guess. I don't know anything about Anti-Venom.
I don't know.
This was kind of a mess. A lot.
Yeah. I think there's a market for it. I think there's somebody who could be into this. Oh, for sure. It is. There's a lot of, on paper, there's a lot of things that are good. It's overwrought. It is too much. It's a bunch of shit that doesn't go together, and it's just totally wacky. And it takes itself really seriously, which sometimes works. And it's got Carlos Magno, who is, he's the right artist for this.
Yeah.
Like, that's the correct choice for in editing, is to put this kind of person on this. You know, the art did its job. You know, we're familiar with him as an artist, and I think it worked. Just don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ratings on Savage Avengers number 1. Ratings.
I'm just going to go 2.5. Okay. Straight up.
I'm going 2.
A comic book. Yeah.
2. Sticking with it.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, stop trying to make Savage Avengers happen.
No more patron picks. You got three of them.
Oh, I thought you were doing a Scarlet Witch thing.
Yeah, no more. No more. We're done. Just killed the patron picks thing.
You could do that. Like we actually have that power.
No. Just we've had three Savage Avengers. We're done. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can vote to add a book to the rundown. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, get a superpower live on the show. I just permanently deleted Savage Avengers from my iPad. Live on the show, like these two fine fellows, Greg Reinhardt is known as Peepers. Because Greg Reinhardt's eyes can... We've given this power before, but I'm giving it a twist. He can, you know, telescope. He can see, you know, microscope. He can give. He can do all the things. But when he does it, he gets these giant steampunky attachments that appear over his eyes to give him the power.
Do they make like a whirring, like transformer type of sound, or do they make a steamy, like?
Well, it really depends.
Like your old iPad.
Yeah, it depends on which you know what he's doing with them. You know, if he's telescoping, there's it's a lot of steam. And whirring and things are rotating and you know that kind of thing, and then but maybe if he's got like a micro telescope situation, it's more a transformer. It just really depends on what attachment is appearing on his face. But these attachments appear magically to give him all the types of vision that one can have. Peepers.
Hello, Peepers. Long time since I saw you. So Ryan Mount, who would sound cool in a lot of occupations.
Yeah, for sure.
Could be, I mean, like sounds like it's a quarterback. Like tell, you know, Ryan.
Yeah, for sure.
Ryan Mount takes the field.
Ryan Mount from Tennessee.
Right. You know, you could be. I could see your name as the sort of photography credit on a National Geographic. Like you went to deepest Papua New Guinea and you took photos of crazy shit, Ryan Mount. But that's not his power. His power is that he is always the coolest guy in the room, both literally and figuratively. He's there and everyone looks up and like, oh man, but he's also always comfortable
and
he's cool. Yeah. Which makes him excellent to be a photographer in Papua New Guinea. Cause
what happens
very,
if he's in a cold
place.
Room?
He then would be he would still be the coolest guy in the room. It could work against him there. Like if like he finds himself, you know, he's doing investigative international photojournalism, right?
Yeah.
And he's put into a meat locker situation.
Mm-hmm.
He will get colder than everybody else. But at the same time, it is very possible that his kidnappers would like look at him then be like, this guy's too cool. We can't do this to him.
Oh, I think that's very likely.
He's also the coolest guy in the room.
Yeah. We can't hurt this guy. Look how cool he is. Look at the hair, the jacket.
Yeah, but it's not just cool like look at that guy. But, you know, you meet somebody like, oh, they're just cool, man. They're good to be around. They're good people. He's good folk.
Mm-hmm.
She's a cool chick, you know? Like,
she's a cool chick.
The combination of those two things is going to make things, you know, more often than not, pretty smooth sailing.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Greg and Ryan, thanks for being patrons. And I'll just say real quick, patreon.com/iFanboy has brought you many things like the talk explode, the book explode, the media explode. We mentioned about a month or so ago, maybe more, that the media explodes were on the edge of being eliminated as a monthly bit of entertainment because it's a stretch goal. We were on the verge of – actually, we dipped underneath that stretch. Well, we're getting back to that point. We're very, very close. I think we're $8 away from being underneath that threshold. So if that happens, we'll have to – pause on the media splits again. So if you thought of being a patron and you like the shows we do, consider joining up at patreon.com/iFanboy. And the other thing I'll mention is that Memorial Day in America is coming up this coming weekend, next weekend, I guess. And we're having a Memorial Day sale at iFanboy.threadless.com. Well, they're having the sale. We just put the shirts up. They can't control that. But they're having a Memorial Day sale starting May 23rd, which is what? That's Monday. So
it's Monday.
That's you're hearing that right now. May 23rd at 10 a.m., for the first time ever, the most popular t-shirts in our shop will be on sale for $15, including the regular and fitted tees, the extra soft tees, the classic tees, the kids tees, the regular deep v-necks, and all tank tops will be on sale for $15. And in addition to that, all bags will be 25% off, and everything else will be on sale. There's an asterisk, but I don't know what that asterisk means because it's not in the copy. So maybe some things won't be on sale.
I imagine there are some things that won't be on sale. Right after this, everything will be, and then accept this. Yeah. That's how these things
work. So keep an eye out for things that may not be on sale. But if you're thinking of buying a t-shirt, and this is a good time to do it, so check it out at fanboy.threadless.com. The sale ends May 27th, which is Friday, so it's Monday through Friday. It actually doesn't include Memorial Day. Or Memorial Day is 27th? Nope, it doesn't include Memorial Day. That's strange.
Hey, Connor, you want to know something about May 21st?
Sure.
On May 21st, my brother, Tegan, who's come up time, turns 37.
Nope.
But if it makes you feel any better, he hasn't changed at all.
I can tell from his Instagram. So there you go. Those are the two main things I wanted to mention. I found out at patreon.com/ifanboy. If you're thinking about joining up, now's a great time with us. We're on the verge of losing the media split shows. And I found out at threadless.com. There's a sale happening May 23rd to May 27th. So check that out. Do you want to do a really fast email or do you want to wrap it up? Your call.
Let's go with Steve B. from Maryland's question, which is, humbly request an in-depth assessment of the composition, quality, and consumption method of the pizza and or pizza balls America Chavez eats in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I just want to say this is excellent thinking.
Yes.
This is something that we should have come up with. It should have been addressed in the show. If you haven't seen the movie, I don't think this counts as spoilers. Basically, there's a lot of universes, and in this one universe, you can buy not a slice of pizza, but a pizza ball.
Right.
Which is brilliant.
I'll be honest. I didn't have a strong opinion on it because I don't have an opinion on pizza balls as they don't exist. So,
right, but let's put ourselves in that place. So you are, I mean, even if, say that you're, this seems like the kind of thing like you could buy at a state fair in Wisconsin.
Sure, and right? I'm not saying they're bad or wrong. I just, when they happened in the movie, I didn't like find myself going, oh, how they're eating it, because I just, you know, they're pizza balls. I don't know how they're eating
them. Remind me this, in the movie, is the cheese and toppings are on the outside, yes?
Yes, which seems to be. Because otherwise
it would just be a calzone.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to have some sort of device.
Well, that's
the brilliance of the pizza is that the crust works as a holder and a guard to stop the orange grease.
Oh, that delicious orange grease.
But
this is where you'd have to break the pizza covenant and you'd have to eat a pizza ball with a knife and fork. You'd have to.
I think
also,
you could
where does the crust go? Is there like a little core of crust, like the molten core of the earth?
Well, and there's a couple of ways you could do it. You don't want just a dough ball in the middle, but let's imagine for a second that there is a crust, and what they do is they fold it around so that the texture is actually on the inside.
Mm.
And so you get the crunch.
It's almost like a spiral, like a roll.
Like an inverted pizza. And I think that the one way that you could eat it, I don't know if it's a hand food on its own, but imagine, if you will, sort of a cardboard cone.
So it's
and it perches.
So it becomes like an ice cream cone.
Sort of, but a pizza cone.
Does it
get more attractive to you? Can you picture yourself eating that?
I kind of like the idea more of the roll aspect that you mentioned, like a log cake, mm-hmm. so that if you slice the ball in half, you'd see a spiral of crust. I kind of like that better.
Uh huh.
But
let
the thing
ask
is,
you
can't
this, though.
Go ahead. You can't not have the crust. The crust has to be. There, the intrinsic value of the pizza is crust.
The sound of the bite involves the crust breaking.
Right, but also you just need crust, tomato, cheese. If that, you know, there's things, there's pizza without cheese, and obviously there's pizza without tomato, but like, those are specialties. Like, if it's a pizza, it's got crust, potato, tomato, cheese, and if you don't take out the crust, then it's just like pasta, almost, pasta sauce. You know, it's like,
end of the day, this discussion makes you want to do what?
Eat a pizza.
Exactly.
The thing is, I'm almost never not wanting to eat a pizza, much like the Hulk's always angry. So when you talk about it more.
Pizza is always the best there is.
Fucking pizza. So good.
It is.
But I did, I noticed the pizza balls in the movie. I clocked their existence. I just didn't have a strong opinion because, again, we haven't really spent a lot of time around the pizza ball. That's not a calzone, because a calzone is, I've had a lot of calzones.
Yeah.
nothing.
And it's not the same as pizza.
It's just not.
It isn't. It should be, but
I would go spiral inside, but something there I has like to the, be a crust
the, in there. The Swiss roll, but there has to be some way to keep that crust from not just being soft dough.
Right, because the cooking the crust on the outside makes it hard because the crust is against the hot oven bottom.
There so has to be
if you cook it that way, then it just becomes doughy.
There's a word here, and the word is crackle, and it needs to. And it can be a bit large crackle. It can be a very smaller imperceptible crackle. But there has to be some form of that.
Correct.
Yeah,
but that's where the downfall of a lot of pizza comes. Is that the crust doesn't snap on you.
What if the pizza ball, the toppings and cheese and that part of it, isn't just around the outside of a dough ball? I don't think it can be. There'd be too much dough, so it sort of goes through it. So as you eat it, I think this is like the Swiss roll to a certain extent. But there's the ball; it's a sphere.
Right. What if what if there was like chips of crust, like an ice cream that has like pieces of. Vanilla cone in it.
Hunks of crust.
Yeah.
I think you're getting something there.
That wouldn't be too bad.
It doesn't hold together. It is not cohesive in that. I mean,
the
like
ball
physically,
would fall apart. Yeah. That's, again, you're going to need utensils. You're just going to have to.
I still like the cone idea.
It's not a bad idea, for sure.
Maybe you could add maybe you could get a cardboard cone just as a serving implement, and it sort of goes up, or it sits inside it a little bit, not just necessarily on top, because again, you have the orange grease problem.
If you had a ball of cheese and tomato in a crust cone, you'd finish that ball, and you just have like a cup full of grease. Cone cup full of orange grease.
You just dump that out and then eat the crust cone, and it's delicious. Like, that's an add-on. Like, if you go get ice cream, you get the waffle cone.
Oh, man. Well, thanks, Steve B. from Maryland. I didn't know where we'd go with this, but I'm not disappointed.
A lot more came out of that than I expected.
Contact at ifanboy.com. That's how Steve B. and many of the others have written in, and we thank you who do. If you want to write it for the Media Explode, please put Media Explode into the title of the email or the subject line. I keep calling it title. It's not a title. No one does that. Let's plug some other shows. We had our Media Explode that we just talked about come out just a few days ago. We did a regular show. We talked about things we've been enjoying, and our main topic was breaking down Winning Time, the Lakers, the story of the Lakers. What is it? Whatever the subject. The story of the Lakers dynasty, something like that. The Winning Time, the first season of the HBO series about the Lakers in the 1980s. You don't have to like basketball to like the show. That's what we have
discovered. If you like basketball, it makes it even better, and it's a good time for liking basketball.
Ron. Absolutely. I'm just saying, Ron also loved the show, and he does not like basketball. So
it hasn't gotten us any closer to getting him to watch Friday Night Lights, though.
Somehow, it just won't happen. But that show is right behind this one on the feed, so check that out. We just talked about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. That's also on this feed a few shows back with me and Josh and Paul Montgomery talked about that movie. We have our patron hangout. The next one is going to be May 28th, so Memorial Day weekend on Saturday. That's our next patron hangout, so come one, come all. And supposedly this coming week there's going to be a talk split, but we'll see.
There's not. I'm working on it, but it's not going to be this week. I'm not cool anymore, man. No one answers my calls. It's not like it used to be.
You don't have Ryan Mount's power.
No, I don't. No, I definitely don't. I want to desperately, but it's time to just accept it.
So we have next June will be a book split month, and so it looks like it'll be a book split / talk split month, and... I think I know what the book is, but Josh and I haven't talked about it, so I'm not going to announce it. We'll announce it next week, so you can get ahead on this situation.
I thought we had decided.
Did we?
Yeah.
We'll announce it next week. Let's talk about it right after this. So that's what's coming up next month. There'll also be an animated show next month too. So there'll be some more stuff next month.
There's not shows.
Well, there's a lot of shows. There's a lot.
Speaking of shows, there's a place you can find them. That place is called ifanboy.com. They just look the same way for a very long time, and it's going to stay looking that way.
Yeah.
If you like continuity, good news for you. there's no financial incentive to change it. All of the things that we did that exist are available there. Mm-hmm. Lots of comic book writing in the archives. Just search the term top five, and I think you'll find some really fun stuff.
Yes.
Search anything. If you want like a history of the various crappy things that people have complained about in comics, you can search for Jimsky's work under his name. And then there's a whole perspective on that that we may have forgotten about. And then you'll read it and be like, oh, man, it was always like this. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out so that you can be prepared for at iFanboy on Twitter and at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You can follow Connor and I individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan. We both inadvertently used the same naming convention, but we didn't talk about it.
No, it just happened.
You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. We are getting through the last chunk of the minis now. The full-length shows are all uploaded. This past week is two of Connor and my favorites, Bad DC Villains, both part one and part two. Those are both up now. You've been waiting for this.
I've been waiting for this one. It's been loaded in the system for a while. I've been waiting for this to get around to this. Two of our favorite minis. If you haven't checked them out, go do so. In which Josh and I just leafed through the DC Who's Who binder and stumbled upon Bad DC Villains and read about them and laughed. This is one of the minis where we were both crying laughing while recording it.
Yeah, it's one I can picture myself in that little room, my little office in my old apartment, and just a little, like one of the all time great laughs.
Jacob Horseman. So
Horseman,
check that out. It's on our YouTube page. They're two of our favorites. They still make me laugh to think about those. It's cute.
Horseman.
So if you like the show, consider leaving a review on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, wherever they're sold. Leave a review or a star rating or however they do ratings. It helps people find the show, helps the algorithm, helps all those things. So thank you very much for everyone who does that. Even better than that is tell your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to help raise awareness for the show. We appreciate you that you are all our marketing team, our unpaid interns. Thank you very much. And that is the end of the show. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I see my bartender. I said, look, man, come down here. You got down there. So what you want this time? I said, look, man, what time is it? He said the clock on the wall said 3 o'clock. Last call for alcohol. So what you need?